Good afternoon. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I thank you for tuning in, and I look forward to the next hour of conversation. Today, we're actually going to switch gears just a little bit in light of yesterday's tragedy in Boston. It felt like it was more important really today to talk about the impact of senseless acts of violence and national tragedies on our psyches as individuals and on our community as well. So how are you doing? We're going to talk about that for the next hours, and we welcome next hour, and we welcome your phone calls to 805-781-3875. But first, we're going to check in with the news.
Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed family marriage therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, social critic, and mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Heavy heart today.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those days where being a family therapist feels like a heavy thing because there's a lot of people with a lot of questions and a lot of mixed emotions, and it's not something you can make sense of easily. So it felt like it was important today to change directions a little bit and kind of focus on how we're all feeling collectively and individually and how do we move forward from here. And in some ways it feels like, you know, we've just been moving from one tragedy to the next. Like we've been under assault.
Yeah.
From the weather and from acts of violence, and it's been a lot to take in. So I just felt like we needed to kind of continue building this community that we're building over the air. And as I've said, you know, every week since we started in January, that one of the reasons I feel so strongly about doing this program is that the radio is one of our last opportunities in our busy lives and how spread out we are and sometimes disconnected and alienated for us to come together and feel like we're not so alone. And so on days like today, I feel like it's really important to have the opportunity to come on the air and tell our story and share how we're feeling and to, you know, talk about our experiences so that we can feel like when we're out in public and we look around and we smile at people that there are smiling faces out there that will respond.
Right.
So how has it been for you? Because you've been here listening to the news.
Yeah, I came in and I basically got told right when I got to work yesterday what happened and had to start immediately covering it. It's just a shock, and it brings you back to what the feeling was, not on as big a scale, but definitely as impactful as the 9/11 tragedy and
In Newtown
and these recent
Aurora
things.
Aurora. Yeah, one after another. And as a new father, do these events feel differently to you?
Definitely, especially knowing, you know, immediately they were saying that, you know, kids were around the area and stuff. And that's first thing struck home really hard.
Yeah. And that's kind of the way I, you know, respond, because I'm a family therapist, but, you know, my primary job is a mom, a wife and a mom. And so my first response is always to take a, you know, check of all those people closest to me and make sure everybody's okay. And even though it didn't happen here, there's still that sense of anxiety that anything can change at any moment and that we are never really prepared for tragedy or crisis. And so when I first heard the news, and I was teaching yesterday, and it was interesting because I noticed that my students were a little off. And I had been so busy prepping that I didn't know this had happened. And so I kept looking at everyone saying, you know, during the lecture saying, is everybody okay? What's going on? But no one said anything in class. And so it wasn't until afterwards that I found out. But I could sense that there was an energy change. So, of course, you know, my first reaction yesterday was to check on my kids and check on my husband and then my parents and my sister and brother. And I just felt this need to, you know, connect with my tribe as best I could. And then on to Facebook, and everybody starts to post and share their feelings. And it's interesting that first response is to kind of get insular and make sure we're safe. And then my second response was then to start looking outward and start wondering, you know, what's going to happen from here and how can I help? And of course, it was nice we had the show today so we could be able to talk about it. But then it has to be balanced because, you know, too much emphasis, too much exposure to the events over and over, the replays in the news can have a really negative effect. And that's, I was concerned about you because you're here sitting and running the news feed over and over again, that it starts to really weigh on you.
Yeah, definitely. But but as the day progressed and recovering it, the more I saw and heard, there was, you know, my first things that I saw were bystanders and volunteers and people rushing towards the explosion, and thought, oh my goodness, that's heroic. It's amazing.
I know. And we had that discussion last night at home about, are we a runner in or a runner away?
Mm-hmm. It immediately put me in that, you know, thought, what would I be doing if I was there?
Any guess?
Like, the hope I'd be running there is, you know, a trained lifeguard in CPR and, you know.
Do you feel like your first instincts would be to
would
run
be,
in?
But you never know until you're in that situation.
I know. I tend to get very calm. I haven't been in a lot of crisis situations, but I definitely don't. I don't know if I'm a runner in, and I don't know if it's because I'm a mom or I'm a chicken, or I don't know. but my, you know, I know that my daughter and I were talking about last night, and I said to her, you know, be a runner away, please, because I want you to be safe. Right. But at the same time, if it weren't for the runners in, there'd be so much more loss. So yeah, I'm having those same thoughts too. Is it, how would we respond to this? And then all the things that come up when we see a tragedy that even happens across the country, how we start relating it to things that have happened in our own life and can bring up feelings and memories from tragedies that we've had in our past. So I'm wondering for you, the listeners out there in the community, how are you doing today? How have your lives been affected, and what's your story? We're happy to take your calls. As I said, we're opening the phone lines early today, 805-781-3875 for a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can also reach us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or email questions or responses or concerns into elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. So we're easy to get a hold of in many ways. So I thought what we could talk about today are some of the things we can do to help each other through the process of dealing with tragedy, dealing with trauma, dealing with senseless acts of violence, because we can't make sense of them. They're nonsensical. They're too much for our brain to comprehend. But there are some things we can do. And there's kind of a three-step process that we look at therapeutically when it comes to dealing with trauma. It's listen, connect, and protect. So those three steps are really important first steps in helping others to cope and to move forward. And so what a perfect way to do that than here on the radio to listen. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting, you know, and it's why I love being a talk therapist, because research shows over and over and over again through the generations that the process of just telling our story, of being able to share our experience, is healing in itself. Like saying our feelings out loud or saying this is something that happened to me begins the healing process for all of us. So to hear someone's story, to be willing to listen to someone, and to really listen without making judgments, without feeling like you need to fix it. You know, quite often we feel like when someone's telling us something that's difficult for them or something they're struggling with, our first response is to want to fix it, make it better, make it all go away, talk about our own experience, you know. But really listening is much more of a receiving experience. And so when someone has been through something that's traumatic or frightening or overwhelming, and they need to talk about it to process what's going on in their head, our job as listeners is to really just sit and respond and maybe reflect a little bit what you're hearing. So if you were to tell me a little bit of something that's going on, instead of saying, well, Brian, here's what you need to do, most helpful would be for me to say, Brian, here's what I hear you saying. Am I right? And then it'll allow you to keep talking and you explain a little bit more about your feeling, and then to say, so here's some of the feelings you expressed. Am I correct? And that kind of active listening, we call it, really helps the person who's speaking to start opening up and being able to cope with and understand their experience a little more. So the first thing we can do when someone's dealing with trauma is to listen, to hear each other's story. It's helpful to share your story also because when others hear your story, they can relate to it and they feel less alone. They feel less isolated. Not everyone is as courageous in being able to speak out and tell their story. So it's important to share when you can so that those that are listening can say, yeah, that's me too. And just knowing that you're not alone in your experience is hugely healing and really helpful. The other thing, when we listen to someone's story, being able to normalize their reactions and allow them to feel that their experience is a normal reaction to an abnormal event. And because we feel a lot of different things when this happens. I mean, everyone responds differently. As I mentioned, you know, I tend to kind of become freakishly calm when something horrific happens. And I don't know if it's because my nature is to be a little hyper-vigilant. I'm one of those rhesus monkeys who's always looking to make sure things are safe out in the world for my family. And so when something horrific happens, there's part of me that goes, okay, I knew something was going to happen, and so now we move into action. It's weird. I think my dad has the same thing. Then other people get very thrown off and very agitated and, you know, don't quite know what to do with their feelings and start to shut down. And then, as you mentioned, some people are runners in. You know, they immediately want to look for ways that they can be helpful. Even if they're 3,000 miles away, they feel this overwhelming need to be of help and to help others. So I think, you know, the first step of listening in telling our story and sharing our feelings is a great place to start. So we're having a conversation with a reluctant therapist today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're going to take your calls at 781-3875. You can share your story. You can share your experiences. Let us know how this has impacted you. Or, you know, the other question that keeps going through my head is, what is the nature of man? Are we inherently evil? Is there evil that really exists? Or are there just random acts that happen? I don't know. We'll be back to take your calls. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and it's 2:18, and we're trying to kind of make some sense of our feelings today in light of the tragedy and in light of what feels like a lot of tragedies that have been hitting us over and over again. As I said, starting with Sandy, the superstorm in the fall, and the devastation to lives and people all across the country, and the Newtown and Aurora, and yesterday in Boston. It's just so much. How do we cope with this? How do we move forward, and how do we continue to feel okay about our experience as human beings when acts of violence or devastation can happen at any time? You can give us a call, 805-781-3875. Hi, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Thurston, and I ran the Boston Marathon in 2009. And I just remember so vividly turning that corner and running down Boylston Street and the crowds and, you know, the, up in the bleachers. It was just the most amazing moment of my life. After what I had dug down deep into myself to accomplish, to run a marathon and be there at the finish line and cross that finish line and seeing the images of a bomb going off right there has just really struck me to my core. And I feel deeply saddened today. Mm-hmm.
I can understand. And because in the light of something that was such a personal achievement, to have such sadness now associated with it, it's probably hard to rectify those two conflicting feelings.
It is, just to see that place where I experienced such joy, mm-hmm. and to know what the other people there must have been experiencing too, and then to have that moment shattered by such a horrible event. like you said, I can't reconcile that. It's very painful to me. And to think of all those wonderful spectators that came to cheer on the runners, and they were really the ones that got hurt more than the runners. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, how do you make sense of it all? It's tough.
Well, telling your story, I think, is the first start, because I think it's important to share that. You know, you had this experience inside of you that's so alive, and to be able to say it out loud, and I'm sure there's other people listening who have had that same experience, because I've never run a marathon, but from what I understand, there's a huge emotional process that goes along with the training and the exertion, and, you know, it becomes one of those monumental moments of your life.
It is. It's so memorable. It's, this might sound a little bit strange, but the closest thing for me to what I experienced, I've run five marathons, and finishing those marathons, it's like when I delivered my children. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a moment that you just don't forget. It lives with you forever because of what it takes to actually do it.
Yeah. Well, so, congratulations.
Anyway,
that's huge.
I thought I'd share what I was feeling, and I wish the best to all the people that are out there that got hurt and that are struggling with this.
I agree. And Tristan, does this make you feel more apt to want to train and get into another marathon, or has it made you feel a little worried about the safety of big events like that?
Actually, I'm almost feeling like I just want to go train and do a marathon and just show those terrorists that they can't affect us. They can't change what we're going to do, and we can still run marathons. And I hope that the big city marathons stay the way they've been. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a wonderful experience, and I don't want to let something like this ruin it forevermore. So I hope that we can find that courage inside of us to just go out there, even if it's scary after this. Go out there and run, and go out there and cheer people on, and not let the terrorists win.
On that note, I appreciate you calling in and sharing, because I think it's an important story to tell. Enjoy your day, Tristan.
Thank you.
And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We can be reached at 805-781-3875. You can contact us through Facebook at The Reluctant Therapist, or email elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. We look forward to hearing your stories and sharing our stories today to kind of connect and talk about this experience. You know, not just yesterday, but all of the acts of senseless violence that have happened, or other tragedies, crises that have hit us. How do we cope? I talked about three main steps that we can take to help those that are processing and to help ourselves. The first is to listen to each other's story. The second is to connect, to let each other know that we're not alone, to let others know that they're not alone. You know, take the time to reach out, make the phone call, check in, be close to each other, especially parents of children who are experiencing maybe fear, anxiety, concern. It's important to stay physically closer to our children and family during these times, because we have to allow our psyche to start to feel safe again, because it's easy to succumb to that sense of fear or anxiety that anytime I go out into public and to different events, is something going to happen? So that act of connecting after a tragedy is really important to help people to start to feel safe again, and to feel like they're not alone, and to feel like they can have the courage to move forward. And then the third piece is to protect. To protect our children, to protect each other, to protect those that are most vulnerable, to try to heal and move forward. One of the ways we can protect our children is to limit their exposure to the news and to the visual images of what's been going on, because it becomes too much. And even for myself, to see this over and over again, it becomes a experience of re-traumatizing after I've seen it once. It becomes the same event over and over again, and I continue to feel those same feelings. So limit the news and exposure. Also, when you're wanting to help protect and make people feel safe, safe, reach out and help others, maybe just in our community. But somehow in the process of volunteering, I know during the news break, they talked about the amount of people that were volunteering to give blood today was overwhelming, because we do have this feeling in our nature. It's our human nature to want to reach out and help others. And it also helps us to heal, to feel like we're protecting others. And as Kirsten was saying, to kind of take back our community and to take back our sense of being in public together and experiencing community together and being able to feel safe. It's important to smile at strangers and to remind our, you know, children that they are safe and that there are good people. And I know, Brian, you mentioned when I came in that there was the quote from Mr. Rogers, from Fred Rogers, about the tragedy that's gone viral, and it's everywhere on Facebook.
Yeah, when tragic strikes, look for the good people or the people helping.
Right. I actually have it. It says, when I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping, she'd say. And I found that that's true. In fact, it's one of the best things about our wonderful world. And I think it's a beautiful thing to look. And I think, I don't know, the first thing that we noticed is the fear in people's faces. But as you mentioned, the next thing we notice are all the people rushing in to help. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about helping our children to cope with tragedy or helping our families to cope with tragedy, it's important to understand that there's some normal feelings that we experience when we go through crises. You might feel irritable. You might feel angry, sad. You might feel confused. You might have this heightened sense of anxiety, but you might also feel numb or detached. Because I heard some people talk about feeling desensitized, that there's so many bad things that happen that it's hard to feel that much over and over again. So it's a normal response sometimes to feel numb or detached and not quite know what to do with the feelings. And you might experience mood swings. You might find it difficult to concentrate. You might find it difficult to make decisions. For some people, you might experience survivor guilt or be easily distracted. You also can experience tragedy or trauma through physical symptomology, like headaches or stomach aches, a sense of fatigue, a loss of appetite, an exaggerated startle response. And for my family, we're not from Boston, but we have a family home on the Jersey Shore. And after Hurricane Sandy, which hit directly on my hometown of Manitowoc, half of the town was wiped out. And it's so hard still for me to comprehend what that looks like. I've seen pictures. I've heard stories. I've seen our house, which did make it through the storm and is still standing. But I've also seen all of the empty spots where homes of people that I've known my whole life no longer exist. And it's a tragedy of a different kind, but I've experienced a lot of these same symptoms of trying to deal with something that's too big for my brain to understand and feels so tragic. But until I go there, until I get back east to see it, it's very hard to incorporate it into my psyche in some way. So what I found happening is I ruminate a lot about the storm and try to envision what was the force and the power that created the storm to come on land and to wipe these homes out. And I still, you know, can't quite grasp it. But I know my dad was there and he talks about it a lot and talks about his experience and what's happening. And, you know, it's really important for him to be able to talk about it. I mean, this is a place he's gone his whole life. This is where he understands himself to be, and to have the entire landscape changed and have people's lives wiped out because of the storm, you know, there is also a tendency to have a little survivor guilt. Mm-hmm. You know, why did our house make it through? Or why, if we were at the same bomb blast in Boston, did the person next to me get injured and I didn't? And so we might be coping with survivor guilt feelings. I mean, there's a lot of things that come up for us in the wake of tragedy. So you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about how do we cope and move forward? How are you feeling today in the wake of yet another senseless act of violence in our community? I'd like to hear your story. Give us a call at 805-781-3875. We'll be right back to take your calls.
That number again is 781-3875, area code 805-781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX Community Calendar. The Santa Barbara Choral Society has a gala this Saturday evening at the Carriage and Western Art Museum, featuring fine beverages and food, plus a performance of Kurt Vile's Down in the Valley. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. It's 2:30 right now. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air. The new Christian evangelical adoption movement that promotes adoption as a way of fulfilling a biblical mandate. The movement is sending tens of thousands of evangelicals overseas to adopt, but the children they bring home are not always really orphans. On Fresh Air, we'll talk with Catherine Joyce about her new book, The Child Catchers: Rescue, Trafficking, and the New Gospel. Join us at 3 o'clock in a half hour for Fresh Air here on KCBX. The number to call in and speak with a reluctant therapist again is 781-3875.
So we're talking about tragedy, senseless acts of violence, crises. How do we cope individually? How do we cope as a community when something, a national tragedy, strikes and we need to somehow accept it, acknowledge it, understand it if we can, make some sense of it and move forward? And how can we do this in a way that helps us to maintain our well-being, our mental health? How do we care for those around us when we're not quite sure that we're safe? And I think that's a big thing that we talk about, especially as parents. You know, how do we protect the innocence of our children but not have them be naive, right, or put themselves in harm's way? Or, you know, I don't want my children to be afraid to go outdoors for fear that they're going to be kidnapped or injured every time they go outside. But at the same time, I want them to be aware. And it's interesting because my daughter, Kelly, got her driver's license last Thursday.
Uh-oh.
And so there is that whole next level of parental anxiety that I'm feeling watching her drive away. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I was used to keeping her safe in the ways that I could control it, picking her up, dropping her off, you know, reminder not to talk to strangers, or all the things you do as a parent. But when you see your little head dart off up the street in the car, that whole new realm of anxiety comes up and worries. And did I tell her this? And did I remind her, you know, about this? And I saw her put her seatbelt on and, oh my goodness, you know, ruminating and concern and waiting for her to text when she gets safely to her destination. It can be overwhelming. And so there is that process of being an adult, of being able to maintain our calmness, our coolness, to model for our children appropriate behaviors so that they don't become afraid. And it can be a challenge sometimes as a parent to be a model of calmness and coolness when inside you're just a nervous wreck. Mm-hmm. But it is so important, especially when we're trying to help young children deal with things that are overwhelming, to be able to, you know, find our wits about us, to not allow them to overhear conversations that would be inappropriate for them or too hard for them to understand, to try not to break down and feel or look so vulnerable that our children feel afraid, but at the same time, to be honest with them. If you'd like to call in and share your story about healing, tragedy, any other concern that's going on with your life, anxiety, how do we cope with it? We welcome your calls at 781-3875, 805-781-3875. So in helping our children, it's really important to answer their questions and to answer them simply and honestly. And it's interesting, and that's true with all conversations we have with our children, that it can be frightening to know how much to tell them about things that happen, whether we're talking about death or loss or tragedy or sex, you know, those things that come up. How much do we tell our kids, and how do we know if they're old enough to understand it? And one of the things that I always use as my baseline when I'm talking to children or talking to my children about things is to ask them first what it is they know about the subject. You know, what have you heard about this? And what is it you'd like to know more about? So instead of immediately answering the questions or starting to tell the story, to take a moment and to allow your children to tell you what they already know and what their concerns are and what it is they need to know to feel safe, and then answer them simply and honestly. Because what we find is that children's imaginations about what is going on, what they imagine might have happened, quite often is much worse than the actual truth. So it's important to give them some sense of an honest understanding of what's going on. Also, children do much better drawing and being creative with their emotions and feelings and actually trying to talk about them or to verbalize how they're feeling. So to allow children to sit down and draw a picture, you know, what do you imagine is happening, or how are you feeling inside, or what are you experiencing, to be able to draw that out or use clay, or quite often, you know, kids might set up their toys or their Barbies or their dolls in some way that reenacts how they're feeling. And so when we talk about, you know, listen, connect, and protect, those three stages to helping people cope with tragedy or loss. The connecting part of actually spending more physical time with our children and to those in our family is so important. And if you can spend time playing games or playing with dolls or drawing pictures to allow feelings to come up and process. And the interesting thing is that you might find yourself that the process of sitting down and writing in your journal or drawing a sketch or painting something will help you to move the feelings that you are having through your body. Because one of the things about crisis and tragedy and trauma, it throws us off. It throws our sense of who we are off, and our sense of safety and our world perspective of, you know, today I got up and I went to work and this was my life, and then there was a bomb explosion and now everything I thought to be true of myself and in Boston and my fellow man is thrown off. And so our psyche, our unconscious, has to process these feelings that we're having. And if you trust that we can heal by talking about it, by drawing about it, by going for a run, by getting more sleep, by eating well, if we trust that our body can heal mentally and physically, then we're going to successfully heal. Because a lot of it is having the faith that we know how to get better. But we also have to be patient with ourselves. We have to be willing to take the time to process our feelings, to tell our story, to hear other people's stories, and to forgive ourselves for feeling anxious or for feeling angry or for feeling sad, to say, you know, I have to experience these feelings to be better. So you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're taking your calls at 805-781-3875. It's kind of quiet today, Brian, and I don't know if it's because a lot of people are reflecting or it's too hard to share your stories. I'm not quite sure why we're so quiet today.
Me neither. But I find it difficult to talk about this a little bit. When I got home, my wife asked me, what's going on today with this Boston thing? And I said, I don't want to talk about it. I just had to talk about it and listen to it all day.
Yeah, it is. It is something that maybe it's too new or too raw to talk about. But I also feel like if we're home and alone and we're not sharing our stories, that it kind of leads us to maybe getting stuck. And also for people who've been through other tragedies or other crises or other traumas, I mentioned my family had a great scare through Superstorm Sandy and just really changed my whole experience of growing up on the East Coast and my hometown at the Jersey Shore. And I know that going through yesterday, you know, although I'm not from Boston, I wasn't there, I was having a re-experiencing of all the anxiety that I was feeling this fall and the fear and concern. It brings up those memories. And I think that's what happens for a lot of people during this time, is that even if you weren't directly there or weren't directly involved or didn't have family or friends there, it can reignite other memories or other feelings that are disturbing and hard to deal with, and that we have to actually reprocess again. Something like, you know, PTSD in some ways about other experiences we've had in our life. So today we're kind of taking a collective pause and looking around and checking in on the safety and well-being of those that we care and love. I'm checking in with our community, our radio community today, and really trying to share our experiences and feelings and saying, hey, you're not alone. We are in this together. There are still good people out there. My mom and I always disagree about this. She thinks I'm a Pollyanna, but I actually believe that the nature of man is good. and that we don't start off being evil or bad, but that things happen in our life that change our perspectives or change our experiences and that can make us become evil or violent. And if you listen to the TED talk right before this, I mean, they talked about, you know, the nature of man and our ability to, you know, find the darkness in our soul at any time. But during this period of time when you are experiencing senseless acts of violence, it's easy to fear that there is evil that can overwhelm us. And how do we deal with that? Amy, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Well, a little bit of a global perspective on this, more than personal,
mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that, of course, it's a tragedy for all of those that were witnessing and involved directly and indirectly. But what concerns me about these kinds of acts of random violence is that it creates paranoia mm-hmm. in people who are already in sort of a fear-based place where they're not feeling either supported by their government or supported by their community, and that that it leads to, I don't know, somehow a rationalization for more violence.
Hmm.
It's what concerns me that there's people who are affected by this, especially I believe that when the word terror gets used, rather than talking about it as a tragedy, mm-hmm. but when we talk about it as a terrorist act, I think it evokes potentially more violence in people who are already frightened about their own security, their own freedom, their own safety. So that's what's been coming up for me today.
You know, and that's a really good point, Amy, because I often wonder also if we start to feel that the world is less safe and more violent and then start to view each other more suspiciously. When we start wondering if, you know, our next door neighbor is capable of this, or, you know, if the nature of man is not really good but evil, and does it heighten our tendency to be violent when we might not have been violent before?
Right, and even though this didn't entail gun violence per se, I would be interested in knowing if nationally there was an increase despite this current, you know, effort to make it more difficult for people to get weapons. If there wouldn't be a surge of people just trying to protect themselves. Just that's where they go when they think about this is, I'm going to protect my family because I don't know what's going to happen the next time I go to Disneyland or mm-hmm. someplace where there's, you know, innocent people gathering.
Right. I think that's a really good point, and I do. I am concerned that we turn more isolationist in this situation instead of reaching out and connecting and trying to be more a part of the community instead of, you know, barricading ourselves in our own homes and our own minds. I appreciate your call.
Right. I heard the physician at the ER commenting on what an outpouring there was of people coming to donate blood.
Yes.
Which is a great thing. If we heard more of that, about how the people are responding locally, that's bringing people together as opposed to making people feel more frightened about going outside of their own homes.
I absolutely agree. Thanks for calling
so
in, Amy. Have a good day. And if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about a variety of responses to national tragedy, personal trauma, and violence. Virginia, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I do enjoy your show.
Thank
very
you.
Much. And my comment is how there's too much media, and that maybe even fuels someone who would do an act like what happened yesterday mm-hmm. or the shootings in schools because they know they're going to get a lot of attention. Yesterday, a sweet friend of mine who will only be 95 in August called me and she said, can you believe that someone would do something like that? And sadly, there have been people like that throughout history. But to dwell on it too much just makes it a more attractive thing to the bad guys. And I did appreciate that yesterday KCBX was not spending all day on that tragedy. Mm-hmm. Because you can have too much information almost sometimes.
I know, and it's interesting, Regina, because I did, we talked a lot before the show today about where we would go with the topic, and the topic we had planned can wait another week, but I was a little concerned about it being too much and people feeling, you know, overload on, you know, the subject or feeling like they were not ready to talk about or wanting to go there anymore. But it felt important to talk about how, you know, we can care for ourselves and we can reach out and share our stories and continue being open and responsive as a community. And I feared this kind of shutting down and being reclusive. So, you know, it is a hard place in the media to know what is too much, but then what is the community really need to have, what information they need to have to feel well-informed. So I think it's a dance.
Well, and life is going to go on.
Yes.
And it's for the living, basically. And I guess that's about it for me.
How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good.
Good.
I have a group of women I meet with on Tuesdays at noon, and we have good chats, and I get out and do things like that. And to my friend Charlotte, who's going to be 95, I'm a kid because I'm only 61.
Well, and
but it was so sweet that she called me and I could talk with her.
And I think that's the key that we're talking about today is how do we reach out and stay connected and listen to each other's stories and stay whole as a community. And I appreciate your wisdom, Virginia, and I wish you a great day.
Okay, you too.
Thanks for calling in. You are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Please be patient if you're trying to call in, because I know Brian's trying to get to the phones as quickly as possible, but we do want to hear from all of you. Hi, Jane, you're on the air with a Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. You know, yesterday when I became aware, I was listening to NPR, actually, mm-hmm. and they said there had been this horrific occurrence at the Boston Marathon, and of course I listened and then I flipped on the television, and one of the things that came to mind about how absurd and horrific this was is that this is the kind of thing, though, that other people have to live with all the time, mm-hmm. in the Middle East, in other places in the world, where you can be at a joyous celebration, for instance, a wedding, and you have people who are so bent on their belief or ideology that this kind of catastrophic things happens. Now, when it happens here, the news coverage is endless. There wasn't a radio station, a television station you could go to that wasn't, you know, rehashing it. And yet, the other things, you know, 53 people died in a bombing in the Middle East was just merely like a soundbite. And I thought, as a nation of people, we really are very protected in so many ways, because this is the exception. Newtown is the exception. These are people who are, you know, severely ill, regardless whether it's an ideology or a mental illness, that believe this is the way to fix something. And I just wanted to know what was your take on that, Elizabeth.
Well, you know, Jane, I think those are some great thoughts. And, you know, I've often wondered if we were going to have our bubble burst as a nation. I wondered after 9/11 if this was just the beginning of more, because I agree with you that there are we are fortunate. You know, this is a rare occurrence. The thing is, I don't know if you ever become desensitized to the point where it doesn't change you inherently, or that you become, you know, I don't know if you can ever just accept it, even if it happens often. And my concern is that we will become hardened in some ways, or we will, you know, lose some of the things that make us unique and human as a result. So I appreciate your thoughts on this, and I hope you'll call in again.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Hi, Paul. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. You know, I wanted to relate my experience yesterday in the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. When it comes to this topic. Mm-hmm. The last couple of weeks, I've sort of been putting my attention and my thoughts and my energy of my day-to-day life thinking about how I relate to the world. And, you know, when I look at it kind of with typology, I'm more of a judging kind of a person, and I'm more of a thinking kind of a judging person. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Right. You experience things more through your brain than through your heart.
Right. And I've been really consciously putting effort and thought and into building the muscle, so to speak, of my feelings, the feeling tones of the way I experience the world, you know, trying to see what things are worth to me and how they feel, whether they're right or wrong or good or bad.
So what did you come up with?
What's that?
What did you come up with?
Well, yesterday I had listened to a Dharma talk early in the morning, and they were talking about how feelings really only have a lifespan of seconds, like maybe 6 or 8 seconds. And then we perpetuate them by going over the feelings over and over again, mm-hmm. and layering upon those feelings our judgments and our thoughts and stuff. And so when my wife called me, and she was kind of in tears because she has relatives over there. And my first feelings were one of, you know, like I could tell my blood pressure went up a little bit and I was heightened. And so I immediately jumped on the internet to see what was going on. But then I started thinking about my bodily sensations and what I was feeling, and I noticed that I was able to calm down really fast and to stay level-headed and not jump to conclusions and to just sort of process the whole news in the next few hours in a rather calm, collected way that I didn't get triggered.
Well, and I think that's an important thing to talk about, because we do have physical responses to any sort of tragedy or event or trauma or shock to our system. And you mentioned, you know, that your blood pressure immediately went up and that you could feel your body tensing and reacting. And the key was that you were able to kind of use your rational thought to breathe and focus and get to a place of calm so that you're able to move forward and make, you know, some sense of the day for yourself, so that you in turn, I imagine, were able to help calm your wife or soothe her. And I think that's one of our gifts of maturity and growing, is to be able to recognize our emotions and feelings as fleeting and as something we can control. And if we can breathe and stay focused, we can then in turn become more helpful to those in our community that need us during times of tragedy. I really appreciate your take on that, Paul, and your call. Hi, Scott, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I guess my main concern is just this is another media frenzy to sensationalize fear, mm-hmm. which is, you know, how our government and other sources use the energy to try to control people and to, you know, pass laws that otherwise wouldn't allow pass because, oh my gosh, we have to help save ourselves. And there's really, you know, not that much danger more than there was yesterday before the bombing, that there could be some kind of catastrophe that could happen, but we can't live in fear. I mean, our country does a lot of things. Like yesterday, I think there was 30 people at a wedding killed in Afghanistan. There was a car bombing in Iraq. 23 people died, and we don't see any of that on the media, but you know, there's a lot of hoopla about, oh, what are we going to do? Who are we going to get back at? You know, I think it's time to stop thinking in those terms.
So how would you like things to be different, Scott? What do you think would be the best way to deal with these sort of situations?
As far as what happened yesterday?
Yeah, just coverage, or how do we approach it as a culture, as a community? What do you think would be a healthier way to view this kind of event?
Well, I mean, I saw a comic. It was like, how do we keep from, you know, becoming fearful or something? And it showed the guy turning his television off. And I don't want to be deny everything that's outside of our world, but really it's almost like if we start living a little more locally and concentrating more on taking care of our own people and our own land rather than going out to other countries and trying to rule the world, we might be better off. I mean, I don't support any of our government policies overseas. I think we're trying to, you know, create some kind of world domination, which is ridiculous. It's when we have people that are here starving and poverty and, you know, environmental catastrophe. There's plenty to be dealing with here.
It becomes overwhelming, doesn't it? And then
it's overwhelming.
And as a therapist, of course, and I always kind of bring things back to this like community and self experience, and how do we as individuals, you know, without becoming isolated and alienated from each other, how do we continue to stay connected and be, you know, together in community and not get divided? Because from what I'm hearing you say and listening to the conversations over the last few weeks with gun control and gun violence and just violence in general, that it's those efforts that we make to try to heal as a community in a lot of ways fracture us. You know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I like social media aspects, although there's a lot of stuff that gets passed around with social media that's not truthful. You know, we have to have better checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know, thanks to groups like Snopes or whoever that can, you know, if you just check a little bit of your due diligence, you'll find the truth. But we can share, you know, knowledge about what's happening in, say, Israel with the Palestinians, and that there's people there trying to create peace, not just these two groups of people that hate each other. It's just two really poorly run governments that are being supported and funded by a lot of people that want to have war, just like we went to World War II to create business. I mean, the people that were making the bombs for Hitler were making the bombs for the U.S. It's a joke. I mean, we got to get away from this mentality of us versus them, and we're all here together, and we have this little planet that's very fragile, and we better start focusing on how to make it better, or there just won't be any more of us. That's pretty simple.
I appreciate your thoughts on that, and I think your thoughts are shared by many, that we have a global situation that requires a lot of personal responsibility, and I'm hoping that we continue to build that community, that awareness. I appreciate your call, Scott. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for your show. Love it.
Thank you. All right. So, Charlie, you get the last thought today. You only have a brief time.
Okay, I'll try to be real fast.
Okay. You're on.
Okay, I just want to remind, the previous caller had mentioned the problems of other parts of the world where, you know, things like funerals and weddings and such get interrupted by violence.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, some of that explosions have been at America's hands. You know, drone attacks some gathering of people and it looks suspicious. They'll launch a missile, and unfortunately, it turns out to be a wedding or a funeral.
I know. And, you know, I think we're probably going to have to go to a conversation there at some point, because it sounds like a lot of our interest is in what is our position globally as a country. And is it almost selfish of us to get focused on a tragedy here in our country when there's so much going on? So, Brian, I don't know. We might have to bring that up in the conversation in a week or so.
Sounds like a future show.
It does. But in dealing with our conversation today and in trying to make sense of tragedy and trying to understand senseless acts of violence, which we can't, please remember there are a few things you can do to help yourself and to help those that you love to deal with and heal from these experiences. And that is to listen, connect, and protect. Listen to each other's stories. Listen to your children's stories. Allow them room to process. Normalize their feelings. Normalize your own feelings, that it's okay to feel a bit anxious and a bit worried and a bit concerned. It's normal to wonder if we're safe. It's normal to maybe lose a little sleep or lose some sleep over it. If you find yourself stuck for long periods of time and not able to process and move on, then it might be time to talk to someone more about what you're experiencing. Take the time to connect. Take the time to reach out. Smile at strangers. You know, let's remember our humanity, because that's what we're all here for, is to love and to share and to be a part of this culture and community together. So I appreciate your calls today. This has been another conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. Please join me on Facebook at The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I'll look forward to continuing the conversation next week.